This is KJZZ, your news and information station in Phoenix and across Arizona. I'm Tiara Vian. Here are this week's stories you don't want to miss. And this is the podcast that's designed to catch you up on some highlights from around the region. Thanks for listening. Here are a few of the stories for the week of December 15th, 2025. The Phoenix City Council has greenlit an expansion of Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company in North Phoenix. Some residents say the zoning change puts industry too close to their homes. Matthew Casey reports.
Members of the Stetson Valley Owners Association live to the south of about 7,400 acres of desert near Interstate 17 and the Loop 303. Board President Amanda McGowan has had her home for 16 years. She says most association members are against TSMC coming closer.
I'm really disappointed in the Phoenix City Council for ignoring their constituents who overwhelmingly asked them to keep the industrial zoning north of the 303 freeway.
Roughly 900 acres are set aside for the TSMC expansion. Space is also reserved for residential units, hiking trails, and parks. The area in question is owned by the State Land Trust. McGowan says it's scheduled for auction in early January. Matthew Casey, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
In health news. The old saying, the pen is mightier than the sword, couldn't be more true than when wielded by a caregiver. For many, writing is a way to make sense of the pain that comes with a long illness. It can also be transformative, a vehicle that helps people move through their grief. Kathy Ritchie has this story.
Now we're going to cry.
Deanne Polis leans towards her computer screen, her Zoom window filling with familiar faces.
Well, anyone, welcome. This is our final of five sessions. So how are you feeling about that?
Polis is with Duet Partners in Health and Aging, a nonprofit serving homebound seniors and family caregivers.
Very sad.
On this day, she's leading a writing workshop for family caregivers where secrets are shared, tears are shed. There's also laughter. Among the squares on Polis' screen is Emily Grotta.
And Emily, I believe you were going to go first today.
Okay.
Today's writing prompt was profile, something Emily knows a lot about as a former newspaper reporter. But when it comes to writing about your husband's life?
Some was easy. The dates, the jobs, the college degrees, and more. But how to capture the true John?
Emily continues reading. She doesn't look up.
My husband John's decline was physical, not mental. So we had lots of time to talk about the past, current events, and what my future would be after he died.
John made sure every detail was in order, down to his own obituary.
John Boudreaux, who grew up in Franklin, L.A., and went on to a journalism and public relations career, died blank. He was blank and is survived by blank. He'd written his own obituary before one of his many hospitalizations, just in case. And so there he was, tying up the loose ends, making sure I would be okay when he died.
Emily's story ends there. The group stays silent for several seconds, a painfully pregnant pause for any writer. But that's the assignment. Say nothing, let the words land, wait for feedback.
So after I had finished it and I watched people's reactions and I could see tears in people's eyes and I could just hear them going, wow, that's amazing. You know, and I realized that they felt what I was feeling. That was very incredibly satisfying.
This kind of writing is painful, but also therapeutic, a way for caregivers to be understood. Kathy Werzer is the host of Morning Edition at Minnesota Public Radio and the founder of the End in Mind Project, a nonprofit that uses storytelling and the arts to talk about grief and end of life.
It's a really great portal to enter into what is difficult.
Like wrapping her head around her own father's frontotemporal dementia, a disease that robs language and personality over several years.
It was after his death where I realized that my writing was a way to process that anticipatory grief that starts prior to a loved one's passing.
For Werzer, writing gave her a sense of control over the uncontrollable.
I wrote in a way to beat back that FTD. To use the phrase, neutralizing the trauma.
And she wrote to corral those wild emotions, the drowning sadness, the red-hot rage, the fear.
And to try to sort it out and make some meaning of it.
Something Deanne Polis can relate to. Before joining Duet, she cared for her mother, who passed away in 2016.
I'm still in the process of processing my own angst about my role in caregiving.
It's the emotional hangover many caregivers experience, the wouldas, the couldas, and worst of all, the shouldas.
And someone has actually pointed out to me, a counselor has pointed out to me, that I need to start writing some positive things about my experience with my mother instead of just dwelling on trying to process what I didn't do. How about what I did do?
But this kind of writing doesn't just help caregivers process the past. It can also help keep their own end in mind. Here's Kathy Werzer again.
As you write and you allow yourself to kind of replay situations and how you felt about that situation and kind of mine those emotions, it can become almost like, in a sense, like a dress rehearsal for what's to come.
And that's not a bad thing, she says. Rather, it's liberating.
Because in a sense, you allow yourself to consider the options. How's it going to be at the end? What am I going to think about? What will I see or experience?
And maybe that's the real power in all of this. Writing becomes a kind of meditation, to sit with the discomfort and ultimately learn how to live with the inevitable. Kathy Ritchie, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
And this is the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast. Thanks for listening. Spot 127's Youth Media Center provides high school students instruction in digital skills that prepare them for college and the workforce of tomorrow. And with your Arizona State Tax Credit, you can make a difference in their future. Visit spot127.org for details. In politics news, Arizona lawmakers are considering recognizing obesity as a chronic disease and examining the cost savings of covering preventative care. From the Politics Desk, Cameron Sanchez reports.
A bipartisan panel of lawmakers and health professionals voted Wednesday to create an advisory committee tasked with providing a report on obesity to the public, as well as the full Arizona legislature. State Senator David Gowan, who chaired the panel, says there's potential for preventative treatments that could save Arizona health systems in the long run.
With our departments and everybody speaking at the podium and from up this way, that causes a lot of hospital visits, right? and has a lot of money that's attached to it that maybe we can prevent and such.
The panel has considered recommending the legislature expand Arizona's Medicaid program to cover the cost of weight loss drugs, but punted that decision to the new advisory committee. Cameron Sanchez, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
In business news, a new women's health hub will be among the first projects developed in Mesa's new Palo District. As Greg Haney reports, the city designated the former Fiesta Mall site as a theme park district last month.
The project includes a women's sports center that developers say will support research, training, and community recreation tailored to women and girls. Vicky Mayo is CEO of Sunny Day Sports, the company behind the Palo District. She says it will be a first-of-its-kind hub to help fill in the gaps of supporting women's health.
We're very excited to be able to bring that sports medicine lens along with all the different types of modalities and different areas such as behavioral health and hormonal therapy and menopause.
Mayo says the 200,000 square foot center will be the cornerstone of the redevelopment of the Fiesta Mall area, which will eventually include restaurants, residential, office, and medical facilities. Construction is expected to begin by the middle of next year. Greg Haney, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
In tribal natural resources, which is supported in part by a grant from the Katina Foundation. Last month, the seven upper and lower basin states failed to come up with new terms defining how the Colorado River is to be shared. Now water users from across the West are set to meet for an annual conference this week. As Gabriel Pietrazio reports, tribes will be there too.
30 federally recognized tribes are among those water users trekking to Las Vegas, including Amelia Flores, who is chairwoman of the Colorado River Indian Tribes, or CRIT, living along the border of California.
Our hopes is to hear some tidbit, some inkling how the tribes play a part in that.
CRIT is Arizona's largest and most senior Colorado River water rights holder. Despite frequent meetings with federal officials, Flores suggests those agencies are scrambling to figure things out.
It's going to be interesting to see what information is going to be passed down to us.
A new deadline has been made for states to finalize an agreement by mid-February. Gabriel Pietrazio, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
And this is the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast. In education news, after months of discussion and public hearings, the Kyrene School District Governing Board has voted to close 4 elementary schools and 2 middle schools. From the Education Desk, Bridget Dowd reports.
District officials say Kyrene was built to serve about 20,000 students, but enrollment is expected to drop to 11 or 12,000 over the next 5 years, resulting in a projected $7 million funding loss. The district was considering closing up to 8 schools, but ended up choosing 6. Ahead of Tuesday's vote, Superintendent Laura Tenya said no matter what decision was made, the district would do its best to support its families.
Our current Kyrene kids will be our priority in all of our transition. This is about caring for people through change and making sure students and staff are supported every step of the way.
The approved plan will close 3 schools next school year and 3 others the year after. A full list is available at kjzz.org. Bridget Dowd, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
And now from the live storytelling event called Eating Christmas, a true story of holiday remembrance. Here's the show co-host, Sam Dingman.
Growing up in rural Arizona, Phoenix storyteller Christopher Hooper spent a lot of time in one particular room of the house. Here is the latest essay in this year's Eating Christmas series.
I grew up thinking the holidays lived in the kitchen. The smell of bacon sizzling, cinnamon rolls just ready to come out of the oven, and laughter that left tears on your face. My first memories were at my grandparents' house, in my birthplace of Baghdad, Arizona. My mom had me 4 days after her 17th birthday and went off to nursing school in Phoenix. So I lived with my grandparents, 3 uncles, and an aunt. They called me Chrissy Toy. I was special, the first of the next generation. My grandmother, Marvella, was Texas to her core. And my grandfather, Chick Jr., was from Oklahoma and was kind and steady as a rock. Every Sunday, she made black-eyed peas, ham hocks, and cornbread that my grandfather would crumble into a bowl of buttermilk while he read the newspaper with me on his lap. Most kids had picture books. I had the classifieds and the obituaries. I started my life raised by Southern folks who still remembered the Depression in the way they would leave nothing but bone on a piece of fried catfish. During the holidays, when we would all come together, the men watched sports while I was in the kitchen with the women. I picked herbs from the backyard of my grandma, watched pies cool on the windowsill, and shared snacks with our little black poodle named Satan. He was my first best friend. And some people wonder why I turned out gay. The last Christmas we spent together before I left my grandparents, I remember my Aunt Ricky pressing her face to the window and whispering, "I see Santa. I see Rudolph's nose. Do you see it?" And I thought I saw it. She wanted me to believe, and I did. After my mom got married, we moved to Phoenix to live with my new stepfather, and life got complicated. My stepfather was an alcoholic. Holidays were the one time that he was on his best behavior, and my mother tried to make every holiday something to remember. When I was 8, my mom, Ruby Faye, taught me to fry chicken and make biscuits like a true Southern lady. And I soon was making full meals for everyone. The kitchen became the safe room when the rest of the house felt like it was going to explode. At 16, I moved out on my own and I wrote my grandmother a letter and I told her I was gay. And she wrote back and she said she loved me no matter what and that I was special and always would be. When Alzheimer's took most of her memory, my aunt told me she was foggy most days, except when I called. She'd snap into focus, tell me stories about Texas and her five sisters and picking cotton as a small child in the Dust Bowl of Texas, then slip back into the fog when I hung up. The last time we talked, I was 36. She was in the hospital bed. She told me she was scared, and I didn't know what to say, so I went back to what always worked. Grandma, tell me a story, I said. So she did, and she died the next day. I spent my whole life in restaurants and kitchens. I went to culinary school, and now I have a small baking business, making desserts that make people happy and remind me of those years with the people who loved me the most. Every time I crack an egg, have my fingers in dough, smell that sizzling bacon and whip up some biscuits and gravy, they're all there. Satan waiting for crumbs. My grandfather with his bowl of cornbread. My mother frying chicken. My aunt at the window pointing at Rudolph, and my grandmother making those black-eyed peas and telling me stories. The holidays aren't the same as they were. Everyone but my aunt and one uncle have passed on. But every holiday, I share that legacy with my husband and my friends. I go back to the place that has always been full of love and laughter, the kitchen. And when I cook, I'm never cooking alone. Thank you.
That was Christopher Hooper performing live on stage at Crescent Ballroom. You can find more Eating Christmas essays at kjzz.org.
And this has been the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast, made possible in part by Helios Education Foundation and Alliance Bank, the Vitalist Health Foundation, the Intel Corporation and Beach Fleischman, the Arizona Community Foundation, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Thank you for listening and for your generous support. I'm Tiara Vian. This is KJZZ. Listen more, learn more online and on the KJZZ mobile app.